Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to part two of our grand finale pod. I guess you didn't really mention that in the first one. So this is Michael and I's last podcast together. It doesn't necessarily mean that neither of us will ever show up in another pod. It's possible. I may show up in some pods here and there, and we may, we're still working out details on who might take over the podcast, but we'll be sure to let you know. But this podcast is about what's coming up this summer. What are we going to look forward into the future and see for this team? Is it going to continue, or will it be like 2 years ago when suddenly they went to hell the next year? So, Michael... Michael, if I just told you right now, you got to handicap it. Are they better next year or worse next year without knowing anything about what they do this offseason?
They will be better. They will be, I think, a team that is seriously talked about being contenders, but I think I think that a couple of other teams could get better too, so... It's all relative.
I think the first thing we need to approach is the news that came out in the end of season interviews and everything. Gail Benson had made a statement to the press. The full statement was released, and then Dell Demps got asked some questions about it in the interview today. People asked them, "Are you willing to go into the luxury tax?" And Dell said, if we see a chance where we can go after a player who will help us compete, we will do everything. We're going to be efficient with our salary cap, but we will go after that kind of player. So is that doublespeak and him saying, we ain't going to the luxury tax, that's what the efficient qualification is? Or do you believe that if they could go out and grab some major impact player and it's going to take them into the luxury tax $5-10 million, that they would be willing to do something like that?
I think they're going to try to play both, where, again, you only have to pay the luxury tax is if your salaries are over it at the end of the season. So they could go out and be aggressive in the summer, start the season where they're projected to be in the tax, and then all of a sudden the season's not going the way that they thought, and then they pay somebody a pick to take a Solomon Hill or an Ejinsa or something like that off their hands. So I definitely think that they'll be in it at some point next year, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to finish the season as a luxury tax team. How about you?
I think that they will willingly go into the luxury cap space, and this is what I'll say. I don't expect to ever hear the words they're paying, you know, $10, $15 million in luxury taxes. If they enter the luxury tax, they're probably going to probably go no more than $1 million or so or two into the luxury tax at the end of the year, pay that little bit, which is, you know, when you're one or two into the luxury tax, you're paying $5 million. And I have a feeling that they'd be willing to accept that if they thought it made them a legitimate contender for the Western Conference Finals. But I also fully expect that the next year they'll be doing everything they can to get out of it and making sure they end the season without it, because if they don't, that triggers all of the really punitive stuff with repeater taxes where you have to pay even more, and you get more hard capping done to your cap. So it becomes a real pain if you do that. So that's my expectations going forward for this team. I feel like they'd be willing to go in a little bit, but they're not going to go in a lot.
Yeah, I think that they'll be reasonable and we're going to budget. I just look at their cap sheet and good God, if they just had never made the Solomon Hill mistake, it would just be so much nicer right now. So, I think that's the one, like, I feel like for the last couple seasons, there's always been a couple contracts on the book so that you could just erase. Aginsa's an expiring, and I view that going into next year as more of a trade asset. Solomon Hill is the only one I look at and shake my head. I think everybody else is on a fair deal or a good deal, or, you know, is underpaid relative to their production. So I feel like while they're paying a lot of money and they're going to pay even more once they re-sign Cousins and whatever else they do, I feel like for the first time that I look at their books and go, okay, there's only one mistake on there. If somehow you could walk away from that or get away from that, or if unexpectedly that guy starts to play at another level, somewhat commensurate with his salary, that'd be great. But I think the books overall look pretty good. I think if you talk about, I mean, I said Drew Holiday was overpaid. I enjoy being wrong. I think you could make a case that if they play the way they did in the postseason and build on that, paying $51.5 million for Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis is a major bargain when having guys like Westbrook and John Wall going to be $38, $39, $40 million players. So those guys are in a bargain deal. I think Mirotic, 12.5, perfectly reasonable. I think you could argue either way that Moore is either properly paid or slightly underpaid for what he's given you. So I really like, Darius Miller, $2.2 million. That's a great deal. Diallo, if he improves, $1.5 million. I really like their books, aside from one guy in Solomon Hill.
All right. And let's be 100% honest, too. Like, if you're talking about trades next year, Solomon Hill, if a team is really looking to make moves, you can take back a lesser version of Solomon Hill, and it won't be as bad of a negative situation. So you could take back somebody who's got $16 million left on his thing instead of $25 million, and that actually gets mitigated somewhat. But right now, Solomon Hill is definitely a negative. There's not really any question. We thought it was too much to pay for him early on, that's going to remain the case. So there's been a couple things said. Let's just get right to this. I have a very strong opinion about this. I want to get your take before I muddy the waters with my loud mouth. DeMarcus Cousins, you bring him back. You pay him any significant amount of money. You're past the cap. You're approaching the luxury tax. as soon as you do that, you throw out the ability to pay the mid-level exception, the full mid-level exception, which is probably, what, around $9 million this coming year, I think it is, per year.
Yeah, it'll be right around where Eatswan Moore is being paid.
Right. So you basically, as soon as you do that, as soon as you bring back Cousins for that kind of money, you're done in being able to throw out that kind of thing. I have heard it said there are people who think that, well, it's, you know, because of the holes in New Orleans line and lineup, that it would probably just be better to let Cousins not come back because he's got the Achilles injury, and use the full mid-level to attract a wing player who can come in and actually maybe give Durant some resistance, Iguodala some resistance, be a bigger defender or maybe shooter on the wing. What is your take on that statement?
I think people are not very realistic with, again, what happens in the real season that counts, a.k.a. the playoffs. So, could you go out and get a C.J. Miles, who's an upgrade over a Solomon Hill and makes you a little bit better on the wing? Yeah, but what happens to all of those guys is they basically become nothing. The way I see the playoffs is like the elite players become 4 or 5 times more valuable than they even are during the regular season, and all the non-elite players just become a collection of X factors that are completely randomized. Like, there's no difference in the playoffs between a Darius Miller, a C.J. Miles, a Trevor Ariza. Like, it really comes down to the stars. The role players are basically negated or marginalized or, like I said, are just randomized. And it all sounds good to go get a C.J. Miles for the regular season and he'll help. And then when you draw your little starting lineup, when you're, you know, doing your projections, he's better than Solomon Hill. So hip, hip, hooray. But really in the playoffs, literally the only thing that matters are your stars. So, you know, why am I going to ever let a star go, a guy who really moves the needle, just to maybe improve in my role player position, and then they all get marginalized like they do in Toronto anyway? Like, it's kind of pointless to me. So I would never do that.
Right. Yeah. So first off, most of the players who are getting paid in that middle range are veterans who aren't going to accept minimum contracts, as they're probably better than that, but they aren't good enough for anyone to rely on them for anything realistic. Like, maybe they have one skill. Maybe they have two. Two's probably about the maximum you can expect. And what you're saying about the playoffs is absolutely right. In the playoffs, everybody knows what Darius Miller is going to do on the floor. Everybody knows that. How hard is it to defend the guy who can do one thing? So everybody knows that Rajon Rondo is playing to drive on offense in a half-court set. How hard was it for them to really lock in and stop that from happening? So those kinds of players are not going to be impactful in any way in the playoffs. And even if you do, like, you could just go down the list of players who are making, you know, $8 to $9 million this year, and we're talking names: Garrett Temple, Markieff Morris, Corey Brewer, Rudy Gay, Moore, Jamichael Green, Jared Bayless, Dwight Powell. Did any of those guys scream to you, that guy is going to even go off and swing one playoff game? And I'm talking, maybe you play 12 playoff games, you actually go to 3 rounds. Is any of those guys going to swing one playoff game for you?
I mean, they could, but that's what I mean by it being randomized, because in my opinion, Ian Clark did.
Yeah.
And you get him for the minimum. So it's like, how I really feel the NBA works is in the playoffs, the top 25 to 30 guys are like elevated, and then guys 31 through 400 all kind of are in this cluster together, and every once in a while CJ Miles will have a game, or like Solomon Hill against Toronto when he was in Indiana, he'll have a couple of games, or an Ian Clark will have, but it's all random. It's not because any of those guys are better than any of the other ones. It's just because maybe the matchup, or maybe the team left him alone, or this was just his week where he was shooting good. But I would never go out of my way and dump other resources for a guy in that middle group, because you could go get one like the Pelicans did in an Ian Clark, and he'll be every bit as good in the playoffs for you as CJ Miles, because they're just, they're random role players.
Right. Okay.
You touched on it, but the real big thing, like, we could get into the nitty-gritty and the dreams of adding a star. The first decision you have to make as Dell Demps and the Pelicans organization is what you're going to offer to Cousins. And I think even beyond that, when push comes to shove, what you will not offer to him. So give me an idea of, you sit down with him the first time possible, him and his agent. What are you offering? And then tell me in the back of your mind, that's your starting point, but where you would be willing to go, and then what, if anything, you would not be willing to do and would be okay with losing him if it was either that thing you don't want to do or losing him.
So a max salary deal, just so everybody has a baseline, is right around, for the first year, I believe it's $32 million? Might be $31. So you're talking about 6 to 7 more than Jrue Holiday just signed for. There are not a lot of teams in the league that are going to be able to come rolling in and offer him max contracts. There are not a lot of the teams that can do it who would even necessarily want to target a center. Like, is Sacramento going to come back and offer a max contract to Cousins to come back there? No. There are a couple teams, and them, you better believe that his agent will be talking to them. Dallas will, I'm sure, be talking to his agent. But if I'm Dell Demps and I'm going to the table, I am looking for a 2+1 deal with him, and I am trying to shave off probably, you know, $4 million from the top end of that deal each year to try to make sure that I can wiggle around the luxury tax. Because I know everybody will say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, you're going to go over the salary cap anyways. Just pay him what he needs to. You got to shave something just to make your life easier so you don't have to get rid of as much when you're trying to dodge the salary, the luxury tax lines. So that's kind of where I'm going. So I'm looking at probably a 3-year, $90 million deal. That's a 2+1 with a player option in the third year.
Okay. And then what if they come back and say 2+1 at the max, or this isn't a threat, we will take another offer and be gone. And so basically you either got to bite it, full max, 2+1, or you lose them.
I'm probably going to bend to that.
Okay.
What I'm most, again, for me right now, it's years, not dollars as much. Like, I don't know what I'm going to get next year from him. And if he doesn't work through it, I don't want to be on the hook for a full 5-year deal, which we can offer him. So
is that
3 years
deal?
Is still a lot, but I'm still hedging it.
So is 5 years a deal breaker at any cost?
Yes.
Let's say it's 5 years, and he even comes to you and says, give me exactly what Jrue got, and I'll take it. So pretty much way under the minimum.
Or
way
150?
Under the maximum. Yeah, let's say he'll do Drew's exact deal, penny for penny.
So I would strongly be against doing that. But I'll also be 100% honest. I would look around and see if there's any opportunities for a big player. Because here's what the thing is with Cousins. If you can go out and sign another free agent somewhere, maybe you don't want to have another giant salary. Clearly, this team is better with four superstars. There's not any question about it. But if you're making a decision that in the future, having Cousins here for 5 years is going to really, you know, wreck my ability to get out of this if the injury persists, then I have to start saying, okay, well, this is not my ideal solution. Let's see if there's a close to Cousins replacement that I can try to find, that maybe I'll have to pay that person a little bit more money than I'm willing to right now with Cousins on board, and see if I can land that. Otherwise, I'll go back to Cousins. Does that make sense?
I think it does. I think there's a lot of things that make sense from a purely logical point of view. You know, the Ringer, Jonathan Sharks, put out another article this week about how it's a tough decision for New Orleans. Zach Lowe put out one about how you could go this way or that way. To me, those pieces, and I'm like, I try to be the king of objectivity, but all of those pieces are just so objective and so just non-human, and looking at it just as, well, you know, another big isn't necessarily what they need, and if they could get an Otto Porter, like an Otto Porter is a better fit than a Cousins. And, like, that's just taking all the human elements out of it, which I understand that we do a lot as basketball writers and fans. The truth of the matter is that there are human beings involved here, and Anthony Davis could not care less about the possible fit of Otto Porter. That is not going to excite him. That's not what he wants. And, you know, parting ways with Boogie, or even Boogie leaving New Orleans, you know, from his point of view, as he had found a good situation, as he had come together with a good group of guys and started to turn his career around, was getting, you know, less techs and really starting to buy into a team. Like, there's just so many human elements that I don't think people pay enough respect to. Yeah, if this is NBA 2K and it, you know, there's no emotions involved and you're just putting the best lineup on the court, then yeah, we could talk about a sign and trade for Otto Porter and, you know, how they could possibly be better doing this or that. I just don't believe any of that is realistic whatsoever, because we are dealing with human beings and not a computer simulation.
All right. I mean, I'm not, that is, like, I don't think anyone can watch what this team was doing early in the year and not recognize that Davis and Boogie appear to be more than generally fond of each other. They like each other. They like hanging out and talking. Like, that's a really hard message to send, but, you know. And, you know, it's also one of those things where people talk themselves into the thing. Well, what's really the difference between $150 million and $180 million? It's a lot of money. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, and they can talk themselves into that. But when you're on the edge of the luxury tax, and you're on the edge of the luxury tax because of massive deals that you have signed, it's really hard to manipulate your cap in that scenario. Because when you have a Solomon Hill or a Ginsa, I mean, let's be 100% honest. If you attach a first-round pick to Solomon Hill at the trade deadline, you will get rid of him, and you may even get a player back who's not so bad. That's the reality of today's NBA. But you're not doing that with, if Cousins falls apart on you, if his Achilles is shredded and he isn't able to make it back, you're not attaching anything to a $30 million deal and getting rid of him. So, I mean, if you get it reduced by five or you get it reduced by six, that's one less player that has to be included in whatever deal you're going to do that finally eventually frees you from him. So, although, let's be honest, if you sign a five-year deal with Cousins and his Achilles is shredded and he doesn't come back, your franchise is effed. So it doesn't matter.
And yeah, that's exactly how I feel. So
you haven't given me your opinion. What is the deal? You're walking out there and slapping on DeMarcus Cousins' desk, and then what are you accepting as the limit to your counter proposal?
What I think is absolutely fair is a full max or close to it, 2+1. I would love to find a creative way for that third year to be a dual option for both, but you know, that's not going to happen. But I would probably start out like you would. I would say, you know, I'm going to give you more than Drew. I'm going to give you more than AD is making right now. So let's start you at 27, 28, and then I'll give you a 2+1. So that would probably come right around your range, of that 3 for 90 that you were talking about. And if he does come back 100%, the reason why the 2+1 is compelling for Cousins is because it allows him to opt out the same year as Anthony Davis. So, you know, if things aren't working, he could leave if AD leaves, or if AD gets traded the year before. It also allows him to get his next contract, which would be after his 10 years of service, which means he could go up to another, he could start at 35% of the cap, which will be a higher cap. So if he truly believes in himself, I believe that if he would have played the whole season healthy, he would have taken a 2+1. So if he truly believes in himself and that he's going to come back, he'll actually want the 2+1. So he could go into that summer and have the ability to make himself a free agent. So that's where I would be negotiating, and I would be telling him that, and it's in best of both of our interests. And if he comes back and tears it up, I'll be more than happy to negotiate that next contract with him. And then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, but if you are not fully back, then, I don't have to worry about you being an albatross for so many years. So that's where I would go first. As far as the 5-year deal, I don't think I could go 5-year full max just because of my principle of what's frustrated me in the past about Dell Demps is that at times he seems to be bidding against himself. I would still love to see the second best offer to Oshik. I don't think it was anywhere close to what he got. So, to me, there's just no reason to go 5-year full max with Cousins, because his best deal next to me is probably a 4-year max, and it's probably from a crappy team like Dallas, if he even gets that. So just on principle alone, I can't bid against myself. I think where I would kind of absolutely reach my point of no return is I would and could be talked into, if I knew 100% he was going to leave otherwise, I think I could do a 3+1 full max.
Okay.
Because like you said, if he's not back, or if he's, you know, if he becomes Chandler Parsons, let's say, you're just screwed anyway. So, okay, I save myself $4 million or even 1 year. I'm probably done with Anthony Davis anyway at that point. So at that point, I really don't care.
All right, let's
Well, first, from Cousins' perspective, how do you think he would rank his ideal contracts? Do you think number one would be a 5-year full max, or do you think number one would be a 2+1 full max? What do you think would be his personal best case scenario in his mind?
I think the 2+1 will probably be that, because I think he still believes in himself to be able to get max contracts. You mentioned it before, having a 2+1 allows him to get out of it and get even more money. And I think he probably thinks in his mind he will get that. If I was him, I'd probably be trying to lock down 5 years at as high a number as I possibly could. Because
if you were his agent.
Is his agent.
Yeah. Because
an Achilles injury is scary. I mean, you have no idea how well he's going to come back from that.
Right, but NBA players don't get to that level by doubting themselves. So in his mind, he's going to do it. It's just a matter of who wins the battle, him or his agent.
And if you don't think that DeMarcus Cousins knows every way to make as much money as possible, then you're an idiot. Like, he and his representation were very fully aware of all of it, which is why they did stuff like threaten the Pelicans with not re-signing when they who's being traded, because that immediately cost him millions of dollars in earnings.
Yeah. So if you're a betting man, July, let's say we could
three
jump
plus
to
one
July
max.
Right
two
now.
Plus, 2+1 max, sorry.
Full max?
Yep.
Okay. What do you think, if you had to guess, and we knew everything, what do you think his second best offer or his best offer from a non-Pelicans team, official offer on the table is this summer?
4 years max from Dallas.
So you really think there's a team out there who would do that?
I think Dallas would. I don't buy that Mark Cuban wants to languish collecting low picks and waiting to rebuild his team. I think he wants to have his high pick this year, have Dennis Jr., you know, Smith Jr. possibly come in and be something really good, and then be able to say, okay, and now I'm going to go get a couple veterans and be back in this thing. I really think that's how he's going to think. And he's going to look at it and say, we were successful in rehabbing Wes Matthews to a good NBA player again. We can do it with Cousins.
You think Carlisle's out there saying, go get me Cousins with what I'm building right now, and Dirk's farewell season, I'm going to bring the boogie circus to town?
I think that they would talk themselves into it.
Oh. Okay, so Cousins, you're betting on a 2+1 max deal, so he's back on the team. The next guy that is a very interesting decision is Rondo. Basically,
actually, before we do Rondo, because this would have to be decided on before Rondo. So we've seen this happen many, many times before. The reason why the Pelicans can offer this kind of contract to Cousins is because they have bird rights on him. So just so everybody has the information, do the Pelicans have any space to go out and sign a free agent before they officially sign Cousins? Can they go do that?
Not really, and I think this free agent market sucks anyway. Hmm. Like, aside from, you know, potential superstars, obviously, that are out there, but like for that middle tier, I don't think you mess around with anything for any of these middle tier guys. I think if you add a major player, it's via the Chris Paul route, where a guy opts in and you trade for him, or you trade for a guy under contract. But messing around and dicking around with real players for this crappy free agent market, no, thank you. I personally don't think that's something they'll even consider.
Okay. So do you think that there are any scenarios out there where the Pelicans will have had discussions before free agency opens and said, all right, I go to DeMarcus, and instead of saying, here's a 3+1 deal, tell DeMarcus, I'm sorry, the Achilles injury is too scary to us. We're not willing to offer you a full contract outside of this small number and put something out there that's maybe not that attractive. However, we've had conversations with Portland. We've had conversations with Washington's the favorite. Like, we've had conversations with these different teams, and they're willing to offer you this in a sign and trade, and we get back this player as part of it. And they have their ducks in a row with those different teams and say, these are some options that if you would like to go down those paths instead, we can explore them. Do you think they're going to do that, or do you think they're just going to walk in front of Boogie and say, here's money?
I mean, I think that they would. Obviously, it's business, so you're going to negotiate. But you could come up with all the ploys you want. Like, I'm sure they tried to, you know, put some ploys out there for Oshik and Drew Holiday. At the end of the day, they wrote him a big fat check. So I still believe, even though there's not a lot of suitors out there, and even though he's coming off an Achilles injury, if I just stand back and look at the two and say who has more leverage, the Pelicans or Cousins, to me, Cousins still has more leverage. If the Pelicans want to be a championship team, if they want 5 or 6 seasons like this, and maybe, you know, 1 year they win 2 or 3 games in the second round, then they could go risk-free and take the other path. But there's no path to becoming a true contender, in my opinion, a true contender, in which you veer away from Cousins. And I think Cousins and his people are smart enough to know that. I also think that they are smart enough to know that Anthony Davis staying in New Orleans, those chances get way better with Cousins there than with Otto Porter there or Aminu there or whoever you sign and trade him for. So I would still say Cousins has more leverage than the Pelicans.
All right, so let's just talk about a few of those options before we jump to Rondo. People bring up all the time Paul George. I honestly thought he was a pure free agent after the season, but the site I'm looking at says he has a player option for next year at $20 million, which is not a lot for Paul George. Is there any chance that Paul George could opt into that $20 million and be willing to come here? And do you think that they would bundle Cousins in that trade, or do you think they would? Good.
The only way Paul George is on the Pelicans is if Cousins is on the Pelicans, because Cousins would be the one that recruits him.
Okay.
So no, it's two totally separate things. If Paul George comes to this team, it's because Cousins tells him, "I already got my deal worked out with the Pelicans. Come over here. I know you got to take a $10 million loss this year." And I've seen people point that out. What I haven't seen, and which is why it's obvious that there's a big hole left by me when I'm gone to educate people on this stuff, and I'm sorry. But what I haven't seen is people doing the math to see that if Paul George opts in this year, and then does a wink-wink deal where he signs his 5-year deal next year with that team that he got traded to, he would get paid way more than if over the course of his career than say if he went out and signed a 4-year deal with Philadelphia or LA this year. So people are seeing the immediate of the $10 million first year. What they're not seeing is that over the next 6 years, let's say he does come to New Orleans and there's a wink wink and we'll give you the max 5-year deal next summer, he would make way more over the next 6 years than he would if he just signed a 4-year max with Philadelphia next summer, and then realistically what his next contract would be when that's up.
All right.
So no, those are two mutually exclusive things. Basically how the Paul George thing would have to work is he would have to go, "Hey, look, OKC, either I'll opt out and I'm going to walk to LA or Philly for free, or I just talked to DeMarcus. I really want to be in New Orleans. You could go get a package from them, and then Oklahoma City would gladly take, you know, some kind of combo involving Mirotić and or more over just losing Paul George for free."
Right. Okay. So I jumped that, but there are other players out there. And, you know, the ones that get mentioned are ones that have just suffered reverses. I'm not certain if they're actually going to be on the market, but do names like sign and trades for CJ McCollum or DeMar DeRozan, or even doing something with Washington, of some sort, any of those things excite you?
Not when you consider all the factors. Again, if we're playing NBA 2K and it's just putting together a team that fits, that could win, I might consider it. But no, when I consider all of the human factors and then all of the differentiator factors, like, there's not many things I like that from Bill Simmons, but one thing I do agree with him on is when he always talks about thinking about it from, like, what would your opponent want you to do or be scared for you to do. If you're Golden State and New Orleans adds Otto Porter to the team that you just played, you're not even spending a half a second in the offseason thinking about them. If now they bring Cousins back and somehow, you know, within the next year he turns into 90 to 100% of their old self, plus in February, you know, they make some other trade and get some other kind of wing, like nobody has an answer for Davis and Cousins. Nobody. So you just think of it from your opponent's point of view, and talking about an Otto Porter or, you know, these other role players or slightly better than role players level guys, like, that's not putting any fear into Golden State or Houston. The chance you have of beating them is by being different and having the two most dominant players on the court while having some, you know, solid guys around them as well, which they do have in place.
It's always fun looking at NBA salaries and realizing things like, if the Pelicans signed Cousins to a max in a sign-and-trade scenario, players that could be traded straight up for him, here's some names that are particularly enticing. Chandler Parsons.
Ooh.
Hassan Whiteside. Steven Adams. Nick Batum. Danilo Gallinari. Like, holy cow, there are teams paying those guys almost like Jrue Holiday kind of money, or almost DeMarcus Cousins kind of money.
You know, there is one that I would do.
Did you like Steven Adams?
No. Huh. There's one that I would do that I would say has a 0.0005% chance, but I could see different scenarios in which it's at least discussed. The only one I would do would be a sign and trade of DeMarcus Cousins for Kawhi.
Okay.
And I don't think either team would agree to it and would need, I mean, the only circumstance in which I think that happens is if, like, LeBron wants to find his way over to San Antonio and, you know, he likes Cousins and they work some way to figure that out. But, that, you know, I know I shouldn't have brought up Kawhi, because I know there's people who think that there's a chance in hell that San Antonio will trade him to New Orleans, and now I just brought him up. But it would have to be like that level of guy to kind of throw away all the other human and intangible factors and trade Cousins. I'm not just doing it for a worse player who could be a better fit.
So if the other team was willing to throw in another $5 million guy a year, you could acquire Alan Crabb or George Hill.
Well, good God. Living the dream.
Okay, Rondo. So tell me what your plan with Rondo is, because I'll be honest. So here's the scenario, the situation Rondo is in. He got paid $3.3 million this year by the Pelicans. He had some guaranteed money from Chicago. So his actual salary this year, when you take about what he got from basketball teams, was closer to $6 million. He can come back next year, but the Pelicans have no bird rights on him because he signed a one-year deal. So they can't pay him a bunch of money and go over the cap and give him lots of and make him whole. So
they
can have to
give him 3.9, or they're going to have to start giving him exception money.
Right. And the exception money, if they go for Cousins and sign the Cousins back, then the big exception money is gone. So you're looking at the I think it's the mid mini mid, which is around
the tax player mid level is what you'd probably be looking at.
Okay, which is basically the same amount of money he was making this year. So, what do you think is happening? Do you think Rondo would be satisfied with that kind of cash?
I mean, again, it depends on what's out there. Like, in order for Rondo to be effective, you're going to have to give him as much freedom and as much control as Gentry gave him. And it's not about money at that point. Go ahead and go through the list of teams that would be willing to give that to him. And then cross off all the teams that have no chance at being a contender or even, you know, are a guaranteed playoff team, because, you know, I don't think Rondo is in a position where if he has a $3.9 million offer from the Pelicans and then he's being offered $6 million by the Hawks, that he's going to choose the Hawks. So now...
Right, so actually, let's do this really quick. Teams that have salary cap next year?
Or don't, because they could outbid us with the mid-level. But no, just find me definite playoff teams, not even contenders yet, but definite playoff teams that would be willing to give up that much control and authority to Rondo.
I can see the Clippers doing it. They're not definite, but they're close enough.
I think they would choose Teodosic all day over Rondo.
Think so?
Yeah, I mean, just because he doesn't rock the boat and he could play off ball. Like, you just have to give Rondo so much control that it's gonna. You need to have a bunch of players that are willing to bend to that. I'll put the Clippers in there, even though I disagree. Who else?
I don't think Philly would do it.
The Thunder?
Well, I was thinking of the Thunder, but yeah. I don't think the Thunder are realistic either, because they would not give him free reign, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah, that was
right, so, like, let's just rattle it down. Miami, no. Cleveland, no. Golden State, no. Toronto, no. Washington, no. Portland, no. Clippers, maybe. Boston, no. Milwaukee? Is that my first one?
No.
You don't think Milwaukee would even consider it?
You're going to take the ball out of Giannis's hands to put it in Rondo 70% of possessions? No chance.
Yeah, okay.
No, plus they have Brogdon and Bledsoe. Like, they have so right. many guys. Who?
San Antonio?
See, that would be the only one that is somewhat interesting to me. Like, let's say Parker and Ginobili are just gone somehow.
Well, they're both free agents.
So. Yeah. So I would say that's the only possible one. But from Rondo's perspective, Popovich is going to make him play within this system and not give him the creative feel and like. I don't think Rondo would want any part of that. I think that would be Carlisle part two.
So Rubio's in his last year of his deal. If he gets, you know, if San Antonio splurges money on him or somebody else does.
And the only reason Rubio kind of worked this year is because they turned him into off ball as much as anything and asked him to score more. They're just going to put the ball in Mitchell's hands even more next year. So I don't see that. Plus, the personality fit definitely wouldn't work in that city. Rondo would live in Salt Lake City over his dead body. Like, there's no way he's living in Utah. So I'm going to say the nay-no to that one, my Damie.
All right. So obviously Houston would take him because he'd be the best point guard on that team. So,
well, yeah, Houston's, plus they take all of our old trash.
That's right. So clearly Houston's an option. Indiana, with Collison being in, you know, iffy point guard in some respects, maybe Indiana?
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked, but I don't see it. But sure, yeah.
Like we have like two maybes and a
And that's before we even get to the draft. Remember, the Clippers have the 12th and 13th pick. So if one of those guys is Trae Young or a point guard, you could cross them off. Indiana, I'm sure they'll have other guys, you know, on their targeted list. Plus, there's an infinite number of guys that could get through trade. I mean, Indiana could go swing a trade for Kyle Lowry this summer when Toronto blows it up. Like, there's just so many point guards and so many, you know, guys who are ball dominant on every team. It's just so hard to find a spot for a guy like Rondo.
Right.
So I just don't think.
So you're thinking that they could slap down, you know, the $3 or $4 million a year and get him.
Yeah, you could give him a 20% raise and not have to touch your exception. So you're looking at like 3.9. I think you could put down a 2-year, $8 million deal where the second year is a player option. And I don't think he's going to get better from that, better than that. And if he does, it'll be from a team that's not going to offer him playoffs, contendership, you know, the freedom that he's had, which I think to him, the fact that Gentry trusts him and lets him go, the fact that he has this great relationship with Darren Erman and respect, like it's not always just about the money. If they gave him a 2-year, $8 million deal and Sacramento gave him 2 years, $12 million, like I really think he's smart enough and at a point in his life where he would pick the Pelicans 2-year, $8 million. So I think you give him respect by not just giving him another 1 year deal. I think you do a 1+1. So a 2-year, $8 million year with the second year being a player option where in the negotiations, you tell him, hey, you show out, have another great year. You could become a free agent again, and then we'll have early bird rights on you and, you know, whatever. So I think that that's a fair deal.
Okay.
Do you – I mean, he won't want to take that from day one, but do you think that if you had to bet, does he get more or less than that? From anybody or the Pelicans or whatever he signs, will it be more or less than 2 for $8 million?
I think he'll get an offer better than that. I don't necessarily think he'll take it. There are going to be teams like Orlando that are just going to be like, hey, we need to bring in somebody here to teach our guys. Let's roll the dice on Rondo. We saw him play well in the playoffs. Let's just get him in here, and we'll pay a little bit more because no free agent's taking our money anyways. So I feel like Rondo has played himself into a more substantial contract than $4 million a year. But I think you're also right in that he will not be in a winning environment if he takes the money.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think – I mean, I don't know his financial situation, but – I don't think he'll trade it for money at this point of his career.
But here's the sticky situation, though. I mean, and here's let's also be real about this. The Pelicans can't do better than that, right? Like there is nothing they can do because of the nature of the 1 year deal he signed with them that they can significantly beat that $4 million a year number.
No, really, they can't. I mean, they could genuinely say, we'd love to pay you more, but we can't, and they'd be truly honest in that situation.
So let's say they do that, and let's say his previous representation had stolen all of his money and funneled it to their llama farm in Belize, and they ran off to their llama farm.
Love
and now
it.
Rondo has no money. And he's looking at a $4 million 2 year deal for the Pelicans or, you know, $7 million a year for 2 years from Orlando or Atlanta. And he takes the money and runs. He's like, I need to make money because I really wanted a llama farm and I'm really sad that I don't have one. What did the Pelicans do in that situation? Like, if they've already agreed to DeMarcus Cousins, do they look for a trade? Do they start putting next year's draft pick on the line and right off the bat? Do they just go out and do what they did with Rajon Rondo and they look around and say, hey, whatever random point guard who's on another team who's pretty good at passing, we've got, you know, $4 million sitting here. Come join a pretty good team. What do you think they're most likely to do in that scenario? Or do they just say, screw it, Drew, graduate to point guard again?
Yeah, I think that they give a slight pay bump above the minimum to Ian Clark. I think they sell themselves on this is why we got Frank Jackson. And, yeah, he took a whole year off, but so did Ben Simmons, and he came back fine.
Similar talent and, levels.
Right. I think, yeah, you give Ian Clark a little bit of money. You say, Drew, you know, I hope you learned a lot from that year with Rondo. Now it's your time to impart some of that and take the reins a little bit more. We're also going to run a lot of stuff through Boogie. But, yeah, we got Ian Clark here to play a little. Frank Jackson, we're going to give him a shot. And then as, you know, a plan C, we're also going to sign some other guy. I don't think it's a death blow, especially if they carry over a lot of the things that Rondo bought. And then I think, again, this is the human element, but then it becomes about how you get to sell it to your players. Like, you're not going to your players and your players just thinking that you're cheap and that you pushed Rondo out or didn't want him. You say, hey guys, we offered him as much as we could based on the CBA and he just chose to take the money. So at that point, it doesn't really disturb your locker room and guys just say, okay, I get it as a business choice. And then they move on. So I honestly don't think it would be the worst thing in the world. But I don't think that's how it's going to play out either.
Okay. Let's ask, I've had this question asked me a couple different times. Cousins is definitely coming back. The Pelicans feel like Diallo made enough steps forward this year that he can handle backup power forward and center minutes with no problem for this team. They have Okafor they bring back for another, you know, year. They decide, hey, we like having Mirotić here, but I can turn Mirotić into something else. What are your odds that Mirotić, and let's just say we have Cousins back, we don't know about Rondo, because I fully expect that Rondo thing will drag on like it did with Cunningham. Maybe not to that level, but it'll drag on. It'll be, you know, week three of free agency, and we still may not know that Rondo's coming back. But Mirotić is under a nice, reasonable contract. He showed well in some of the playoffs. You could probably put him, he's a one-year deal. You could put him on the market and get some player at the wing or at the guard position that might help you. What are your odds that such a thing occurs? Or do you think they are going to try to come into the season with all three big men?
I would say it's less than 3%, and I think I would say the only way Mirotić gets traded this summer is if it's in a Paul George trade. So, and I think Paul George is probably about a 3%, so that's my answer for Mirotić. I would bet heavily that he is not moved unless we are talking about a star. And the only one I think is possible is George. So if the Paul George scenario comes through, I think Oklahoma City will want Mirotić in that trade. The Pelicans will try to do Hill and Moore. And then when push comes to shove, Mirotić will be in that trade. Otherwise, he will be on the team on opening night.
Okay. Well, I mean, clearly you're not aware that LeBron James is coming to New Orleans without a doubt. So, I mean, I'll forgive you that, but I think you're probably right. Like, I just can't see a player, because this has to be a straight-up trade, and I can't see a player that you're going to be able to trade for $12 million who's going to make them obviously better. Like, Tobias Harris? Like, I guess he'd be nice on the wing.
Yeah, and all these players would be nice in their upgrades. Like, Nick Batum would be nice, but, like, there is no reason to rush right now. There is no way that a Miritic trade that is there this summer won't be there in February.
That's right.
So there's just absolutely no point. And then again, you have to remember the timeline. You have to make this decision in late June, early July. Boogie's still in the dead middle of his rehab. So, yeah, you re-signed him, but you don't know if he's going to play in November, December, not until February, especially what you just went through with Solomon Hill. So this idea that, oh, now we got three bigs plus DL, no, you still don't know what you have in DeMarcus Cousins in June and July. So, yeah, I mean, to me, there's only two possible paths this offseason goes. I know we can make this path, this pod longer, but there's path A of, do we have a shot at a Paul George, or we could laugh at it, but, or a LeBron James, and if so, we move heaven and earth to do those things, and put together four stars, or we basically just run it back. We get a couple of guys on one-year contracts, so when February comes, I've got Miritich on an expiring. I got a Jinsan, I got an expiring. I got the one-year guys I signed this summer on an expiring, which is exactly what we did with Jameer and Tony Allen. I've got more on a reasonable contract. Like, I have all these little pieces. Once I see that Cousins is back and playing well, I got all these little pieces that I could possibly use for a trade. There's no way that I'm getting a better trade in July than I could in February. So what the heck am I rushing for?
It's a hard argue against, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it, to me, it's common sense, but I know fans want to, like, plug the hole and make the starting lineup and the depth chart look as pretty as possible right now. But in reality, there's absolutely no point in doing that. That Nick Batum trade that you might want this summer, I guarantee you will be there in February. And history says that there'll probably be things there in February that are really good that are not possibilities in July. Like, in July, every team is delusional. Like, in July of last year, I bet the Knicks thought they would be good. I bet the Kings thought they would be good. Like, the teams think they're going to be good in the summer, so they're not having fire sales. The fire sales come when reality hits, and that doesn't happen until January or February.
Okay. Handicap the odds that a player who Dell Demps really liked in college, who went off to Europe, finds his way onto the team in the summer and gets a 1 or 2 year contract from him.
I would say maybe non guaranteed, but I would say somebody who fits that bill. Can I say 101%?
Yeah.
Is it possible to go over? Yeah, I would
that's,
say that.
That's his play, right?
That's his play. Another play that's really smart that I would expect is, so especially as you're bumping up against the luxury tax, it behooves you to buy draft picks, or, I mean, if you go out and you buy the 40th pick for $2 million, it actually ends up saving you money because that person's salary is less than the veteran minimum salary, and then all the bonuses of hitting the luxury tax that I guess, long story short, I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of goes the other way and actually buys a draft pick to save money, or do something like you go out and you buy the 38th pick for $2.5 million, and then you sell the 51st pick for $1 million, and it looks like a $1.5 million loss, but now you've got a guy who actually might be able to make a rotation for you, and he's on a smaller than vet minimum salary, which would save you money when you start calculating the luxury tax. So I
right, and what we've seen Dell do every single year is he goes and says, okay, I'm going to take the one-and-done guy who going into the college season was highly ranked and something kept him from performing, whether it's an injury or, you know, a really strong senior in front of him. And that guy's – and they're really young, and that guy's going to be my draft pick two years down the line. Like, that's exactly what Diallo and Frank Jackson are. So he'll probably just keep making that play.
Yeah, and there's guys like that this year, the Brandon McCoy from UNLV, another Duke guard named Trayvon Duval, even Hamidou Diallo from Kentucky actually fits that bill to perfection. He would be a guy that you would have saw as a lottery pick at the beginning of the year and just got in a situation with Kentucky, and now he's a second-round guy. So, yeah, there's guys like that that make sense for Dell. The guy that I'm begging for is there's a guy named Bruce Brown in Miami that I think, you know, he's just been having all these injury issues, but he's, I mean, Darren Erman's wet dream, defensively athletic, could shoot the ball. So there's guys like that out there. I think Dell is smart enough to know that the history of picks in the 50s, you know, people say second round picks like they're all the same. Reality says that you want to pick between 31 and 40, ideally like 31 to 35, 36. Usually that's where the drop off happens. Having the 51st pick, I know people could bring up like Ginobili, Isaiah Thomas, like these rare outliers. Picks in the 50s are usually garbage. So something where he trades cash to move up or buys a pick and then sells the pick later, to me is more likely. I don't think he's really going to be able to get any value out of pick 51 as far as helping this roster.
All right. Any chance he trades Solomon Hill for the first pick of the draft?
In the WNBA? Yeah. I think Solomon Hill could be a double-digit scorer in the WNBA. I really do.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
Yeah, solid bench guy. So anyway, I think there's some interesting things Dell could do now, but I would expect him to be looking at different ways to save and make money. But with Rondo, I mean, we really started here with Rondo. I think the other interesting guy is Ian Clark. There, you know, it was funny. Earlier in the year, there would be games where I'd put out a poll. If you could only sign one for 2 years, $8 million, who would you do, Rondo or Ian Clark? And some nights it'd be Rondo. Then I'd put that same poll out after a good Ian Clark game, and it's Clark. There's games where Ian Clark just looks like, you know, I mean, he definitely has confidence. Some would say irrational confidence. He has a skill set. He knows the system. I don't know. I go back and forth on him all the time. Where do you land on Ian Clark and how badly or how much you would do to get him to be a part of this team again next year?
I would try to keep him at about the same salary, like a minimum, maybe give him a little bit of a bump, but like I'm not even going to like $4 million. Like, so Clark is every single season there are 15 of these guys in the league that are minimum salary dudes who have a game here and there. They're the guys we always talk about who are going to just come off the bench, and normally they average 5 points a game, but this night they're dropping 16 on you. And we've had those players in this league for years. There's usually, you can find several of them. I'm sure Dell has his eye on a few of them that are in Europe right now. They're not that hard to come by. I would prefer to keep Clark if you can, because he's had a year in the system. He's played with these guys. You want to try to keep everybody warm and fuzzy. But I'm not expending my rare exceptions to keep him. I guess there's, what, the $2 million exception that we could offer him? Sure, whatever. That's $2 million here or there. I just throw that kind of cash around when I'm out for a night, so whatever.
Yeah, I know how you roll. I mean...
There really isn't anybody else on the stage. Like, are you worried that Jordan Crawford might leave?
Oh, God, no.
DeAndre Liggins?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting thing. I think the team obviously knows a lot better than us about Frank Jackson, but, I think they think Frank Jackson's a good player. I think they think his upside is definitely Clark and a lot more. And do you just basically now, like, do you have the comfort of knowing we're a good team, we're a playoff team, now we don't have to worry about squeezing every bit of juice out of every spot in the rotation moving forward? Can we go and take our lumps with a guy like Frank Jackson who, if we make him the ninth man next year and play him 12, 15 minutes that we would otherwise give Ian Clark, that we'll take some lumps and he'll have some bad moments for us that a veteran wouldn't have, but it'll also give us the upside? Like, that's kind of the benefit of being a good team now, is that you have more of a margin of error and it allows you to do things like that, where the Pelicans of the past, who haven't been in the playoffs for years and need to get in or everybody gets fired, like, they're going to play a Jameer Nelson. Is it possible now that this team has turned a corner where they'll do what San Antonio did and play a DeJounte Murray, even though, it'll be bad and spurts, but eventually it'll pay off? Like, is it possible the Pelicans have gotten to that point?
Well, they kind of did it to some limited extent with Diallo this year. Like, and I know they signed Okafor because they didn't trust Diallo, but they still fed him minutes even when Okafor was around in places. So, you know, I think they're in the place now where they're going to start doing that with guys for limited minutes. And I think that's acceptable. And I expect Frank Jackson will probably get those. It doesn't mean that they're not going to be perfectly happy that if Frank Jackson proves in the first five games he can't handle that, that they're not going to go find the Jameer Nelson on the trash heap, because you're going to find players like that.
I got so excited for a minute. I thought you were going to say go find Jimmer Fredette.
Oh,
go maybe. Find Jimmer. I was like, oh.
So the best Jimmer Fredette thing that I have, by the way, the last time somebody mentioned Jimmer Fredette, he was scoring 50 points a game in the Chinese leagues. And I was like 50 points a game is a crazy number. I was like, really 50 points a game? I know the competition level is so much further down there that's just nuts. I went and looked, though. He's not in the tier one Chinese league. He's in the tier two Chinese league. So he's essentially scoring 50 points a game in the Chinese D league.
Wow.
So I'm sorry, that's how far Jimmer has fallen. He eventually got called up to the upper league, but yeah, 50 points a game in the D league.
He still gets free food in Utah, which I don't get. So
I'm sure he does.
Ian Clark's an interesting one for me. I would from day one, I would offer him the bump over minimum. Maybe I offer him a little more than that if I lose Rondo, but I'm not, I'm letting him go out there and see if he could find a better offer. And if he does, I shake his hand and wish him the best of luck. But, I think it would be a great off season. Obviously the dream off season is get a Paul George or whatever. But if you get Boogie on a 2+1, if you bring Rondo back for, like I said, the 2-year 8 or just a 1-year 4, and then you bring Ian Clark back at a bump over the minimum wage, I would list that as a very good summer. go sign one or two other guys on a one-year deal, and then just go into the season and know that kind of survey the landscape, and you could make another deal in January or February to try to put yourself over the top.
All right, I have one last scenario that we've ignored entirely. We have to address it before we end this podcast. DeMarcus Cousins, we make their 3+1 offer. The Dell does max 3+1. The Mavericks walk in and say 4 years max deal, and we're gonna throw in free tickets to wrestling every single game, every single wrestling event that comes to Dallas. And he loves that, and he goes there. What do the Pelicans do? What is their option? Are they going to go try to find a center to play next to Davis? Are they going to go spend their mid-exception on that? Are they going to try to trade, see if maybe they can get Solomon Hill for Jan Mihimi because they think Mihimi can help them? Are they going to try to plug the center hole that leaves because Davis has never wanted to play center? Or are they going to say, screw it, we're finally going to go try to find a wing with that money, even if they're not different wings that are going to make much of a difference for us in the playoff season?
I don't think it has. I would guess that they would go and get a Vucevic or a Valanciunas or somebody who's a quality player that won't cost much resource-wise because teams can't get much for centers nowadays. Plug that up, but knowing that Mirotić is going to finish games for them. But I definitely think they would get a big body. I don't think that they're – I mean, Diallo's not really going to play it. Mirotić isn't going to play it. So, no, I don't think they're going to put Anthony Davis through that for 82 games. So they would go out and get somebody who's, you know, they're not going to go and get a Steamsma. They'll go get somebody who's a – respectable starting center, but Mirotić would be finishing games.
They could sign Greg Monroe to that mid-level.
Yeah. I mean, something like that. But in the meanwhile, again, if you're going to go get that wing or you're going to go get another difference-making player, there's just no need to rush and do it in June or July. Like, that is... Teams are not having fire sales. They're trying to sell things at full price at that point. There's usually less options out there. And then every January or February, something pops up that you didn't think would a couple months before, and you just wait for that. There's no way you could have gotten Boogie for the sixth pick and a future first, you know, that June or July. But all of a sudden, he's sitting there in February, and you get it for him later in the year. So there's just no need to rush and make a move, like I said, unless it's a Paul George situation.
Okay. All right. So give us final odds on Boogie coming back and final odds on Rajon Rondo coming back. What do you think?
I got them both at over 95%.
Okay.
And
Despite me trying to come up with teams that might come after DeMarcus Cousins, I'm giving a 100% chance that the Pelicans are going to do whatever they have to keep Cousins, because we have seen what Dell Demps does. He is happy to overpay his guys if he has to. He will do it. Rondo, I'm only giving an 80% chance to come back.
Huh. Yeah, I feel pretty confident about both. And then since this will be our last one, we could go out even further. I guess I'll start with this. What would you put the odds that by 2025 the Pelicans have A, been in an NBA championship, and B, won an NBA championship? Are we getting out of the pod game too early and they're going to win a championship after we leave?
I think that their chance of winning a championship is still like 10%. I think their chance of reaching an NBA Finals is like 15%. Okay. I'm sorry, there's like a bunch of teams in the West that, like, even if you say Golden State Warriors somehow drop off dramatically in 3 years, then the Pelicans or maybe have a couple of their players still in their prime window. Maybe they've added another guy. But there are teams with young guys that are up and coming already in the West. And just assuming that they're not going to be able to surpass the Pelicans, it's just they're in the – like, Davis is going to be good for the next 7-8 years. So that's your window. He's going to be amazing for that long, and they've got to figure out how to put players next to him. And the chances that you're going to do that when you don't already have that necessary second guy is not that high. And I don't know if Cousins is that guy. I'm not super sold on him being that guy. Drew shocked the hell out of me this year. I don't think he's that second guy even after shocking the hell out of me. But, you know, they have two guys that if you add a third comparable Drew Holiday to the mix, then, yeah, you're challenging. So that's what they've got to do. They've got to find that third guy.
And then what are your odds as of today right now that Anthony Davis signs his third contract with the Pelicans?
65%.
Holy cow. Okay. Okay. Well,
what
you are.
Answers? What are your answers?
Win a title under 2%. get to the finals. I think if you get there against the crappy East, you're likely to win, but maybe Philly turns into a juggernaut. So I'd say 5% chance they get to the finals by 2025, 2% chance they win it. I still think it's more like, I would say this is a huge cop-out, but I would say, I'm not going to cop-out. I would say 40% chance he signs his third contract with the Pelicans. I think in order for that to happen, Drew would have had to really turn the corner, and I don't know if I'm there yet believing that we have just seen what Drew's going to be over the next couple of years, as much as we might look back in a couple of years and go, why isn't he playing like that, like he did on that series. And then I think Boogie has to be here when Davis is time to sign, and I think he has to be playing pretty well. So I think the odds of both of those things happen are less likely than one of those things not going right. So I'm going to put it at 40%.
Okay. Yeah, and, you know, we're on an optimistic high, but what is the injury history of this team anyways? Aren't we being kind of stupid right now?
Yeah. Oh, it looks like breaking news as we leave our last podcast. It all comes around. It looks like James Borrego just got the head coaching position with the Charlotte Hornets. So,
yeah,
an old Pelicans guy going to Charlotte, the Hornets' old name. So it all comes full circle, and that's the best way to end the last In the Know podcast ever.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for all the years of listening and supporting us and interacting with us in various ways. I mean, I hope that everybody's enjoyed the pods that we've put out there. We're over 310 of them, and there's some that you can't even hear anymore because they got overwritten. So the lost podcast. But I don't know. I've had a lot of fun over the last almost 10 years doing this. So thanks for listening.
One day we'll actually meet.